Welcome back to Rockstock Channel. It is Friday, March 1st. We just celebrated the leap year. So 29th, RK Equity just published our scoreboard and there was a lot of green shoots. So I'm calling this kind of like lithium leap year. We're going to go through that just a little bit. There were a number of stocks like Wildcat was up 80% in 1 month and a number of others that were up 20, 30, 40%. So, you know, China futures, Guangzhou futures have gone crazy in the past 2 weeks post China New Year. We have Matt Fernley on the program for, I don't know, the third or fourth time. I saw Matt most recently in November and with Rodney at the one-to-one conference, and we were commiserating and saying, what the hell did we, you know, get wrong? When's like things going to recover? And Matt and we agreed that, you know, nothing would happen until kind of Chinese New Year, and then fingers crossed, you know, post China New Year, things would get better. So here we are, they are getting better. Don't know what we're going to call this yet, but we had Matt on the program when lithium prices were quite high, and we said, you know, how high can the lithium price go? So maybe we'll put that question to Matt. But we also had him on as they were falling in March of last year. And we labeled it after a Tom Petty free falling. And he rightly called with Rodney a bounce, you know, which we had like nearly an 80% bounce before, you know, falling aggressively, you know, in the September, whatever, in the August to, you know, December period. So Matt just published his yearbook, the Battery Materials Review Yearbook. And Rodney wrote a piece for that. And Matt, we would all encourage you, this is free, you know, no such thing as a free lunch, but you know, this is free.
There is a free information.
Yeah. Not just about lithium, but also graphite, nickel, and other battery materials. So Matt's been a great analyst and puts a lot of information, you know, in the public domain, for free. And, obviously has some other paid for, you know, products, which we would encourage you to subscribe to. But, yeah, before we get into that, just want to remind everybody of our sponsor, Lithium Royalty Corp, you know, ticker symbol LIRC on the Toronto Stock Exchange. I'm heading to PDAC on Sunday. Look forward to catching up with Ernie Ortiz, the CEO. Current market cap of LIRC is about $370 million. They have royalties on mostly hard rock companies, including Sigma and Winsome Resources. You know, just check that out and we'll have a bit more, you know, later in the program about them. And, again, if you are not getting our lithium ion bull directly into your email box, please, you know, register your email at rkequity.com. And if you like these videos, please like and subscribe and comment. You know, let us know in the comments below. Do you like Matt? You like what he's saying? You know, what other kind of guests do you think we should have? Do you agree with what he's saying? And also, as a reminder, all of these videos are available in audio format on Spotify, Apple, and other podcast platforms. You could follow Rodney and me on X at RodneyHooper13 and me at Lithium Ion Bull. And Matt Fernley, you're at Review Battery, I think is your handle. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, I post mostly on LinkedIn these days, but I do occasionally post on X.
Okay. That's right. And you're talking about your LinkedIn post. So for a lot of last year and the year before, you were arguing, we were arguing that, you know, mining can't catch up to, you know, battery and EV. You know, you had these unconstrained and constrained models where, you know, EV take up was not going to hit those models because you would have an undersupply of battery materials. So here we are. We've mentioned this before, you know, forecasts that Rodney put forth like 5 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, battery demand has exceeded by a lot, you know, what he was forecasting back then, but supply actually did manage to keep up in lithium, you know, and then in nickel and cobalt, you know, so they're like prices of batteries are going down, heading toward, you know, $50 a kilowatt hour. So in lithium, we have talked, I mean, about we got wrong, you know, China lepidolite, you know, supply, we didn't know. And some people are saying, you know, the cost of that is less than we, you know, estimated, you know, African, you know, DSO and other things, you know, have come on the market faster, Zimbabwe in particular. And then there was a lot of battery destocking, right? You know, these are the causes. That's what we got wrong. And now we're getting some signs that, you know, we don't know. In China, you know, maybe curtailments. The West is curtailing a little bit. We don't really have a line of sight on Africa. I read a research report yesterday, you know, out of a China broker that is waiting for the Chinese companies to put out their, you know, half yearly results so they can get some sense of actually what's happening in Africa. They have a better sense of what's happening on China lepidolite, but no line of sight on that. If you have any line of sight, Matt, you know, please share that. Yeah. And also on the battery destocking. I mean, you have a great partner, Cormac Olaire, who's based in China. We listen to, you also have a great podcast, the Recharge Podcast, which we listen to monthly. It's also chock full of great information, but I find that Cormac is very plugged into what's happening in China. So yeah, with that, how are you seeing things, you know, at the moment, based on what I said, and then Rodney will go into his more detailed questions after that.
Okay. So, I mean, I think you relatively well recapped what we got wrong last year. I think one of the key things that we got wrong last year was that we didn't realize how much inventory had been built in the supply chain. So China brought forward a lot of demand into the back end of 2022. And that lithium demand didn't go into lithium inventories. It went into cathode inventories and battery inventories in China. So it didn't show up on an obvious study of lithium inventories in China. We saw, you know, 20, 25 days of supply, and that looked absolutely fine. Where it did show up was when you started to analyze what the contained lithium was in cathode inventories and in cell inventories. And, you know, that's what we have been keeping a very close eye on over the last 6 to 12 months. And the good news is that they're starting to fall again, particularly in the cathode space. So that's great. But I think it sort of emphasizes again that in this industry, you don't have to just look at the supply and first use demand markets. You have to look all the way along the battery supply chain. And that makes it very different to the sort of industries we've looked at before, whereby, you know, if you compare that with the copper industry, you look at copper supply and you look at, you know, the first end user of copper demand, and that's fine. And then the copper goes out of the industry and doesn't go in inventories. But with this industry, because the supply chain is so long, both in length and in distance and time duration, it's very important to keep an eye on inventories all the way along the supply chain. And that's what we learned last year. Having said that, the situation looks better now, and we're starting to see a destocking taking place, certainly in midstream inventories and to some extent in cell inventories. And the thing that we're sort of keeping an eye on now is whether we will get a restocking in cathodes and in lithium for cathode makers after Chinese New Year. And if we think back to what happened last year, it was very seasonal, and we saw that restocking in March and April, and that was what drove the lithium price recovery last time around. So that's very much been our basis. That's been very much my basis for what I expected to see in 2024. And so far, touch wood, that has come to pass. The big question, and I'm sure we'll get onto it later, is how long that lasts for. And then moving on to your other question in terms of supply, that's a really interesting story/question. My sort of 25-year career now as a commodity and materials analyst, it's always paid to be long of those materials of which China is short, and short of those materials of which China is long. You know, initially our view was that China was short of lithium, but China's played a little bit of a blinder over the last 2 or 3 years. First of all, with lepidolite, and secondly, going around the blocks that were placed on Chinese investment in Australia and in North America to invest in hard rock assets in Africa. And, you know, just to sort of come back to that, brine assets take a long time to develop, a lot of capital cost to develop. So we had pretty good visibility as to what was going on in the brine assets in Latin America. And there were a number of Chinese owned projects down there. The Chinese are bonged out from investing in Australia by the Australian government, and they're bonged out from investing in North America. So the only other region that China Inc. can invest in really that's got resources is Africa. And by God, they've invested a lot in Africa, and it really came in from left field, and it really caught us sort of unawares. And if you look at, you know, where I see a lot of supply coming over the next 3, 4, 5 years, a lot of it's in Africa. And, you know, one of the things that became very clear to us over the last 2 or 3 years is, you know, lithium bearing pegmatites, they're not rare. So, you know, you find them a lot in geologically active regions, and Africa has a lot of very geologically active regions. However, it then becomes a semi-bulk material, and you have to think about projects in terms of, one, ore body size, two, availability of infrastructure, three, mineralogy, and four, management. So, you know, all of those factors now come into focus when you look at investing in hard rock projects. It's not necessarily, you know, small projects that you can get into production straight away. For the future, infrastructure and mineralogy and size and therefore operating costs are going to be absolutely key, I think. So yeah, China's really played a blinder in terms of supply. And then the big question, and the other question that you asked me about lepidolite, what are the operating costs? That is a very interesting question. And my view is that operating costs are being widely underestimated in the market. We initially, when we went into that analysis on the Chinese lepidolite, thought that operating costs would be around $25 a kilogram. I believe that all in operating costs are still around $25 a kilogram. And I know levels of $10 to $15 a kilogram have been quoted by some brokers. And I think those are mine gate operating costs for currently operating lepidolite mines in China. But one of the things that's very interesting is currently about 50 to 70% of lepidolite operations in China are idled. They're not operating at current prices because they're not making money at current prices. So there's that to bear in mind. Those are higher cost operations, and they are not profitable at current levels, so they're not operating. The lower cost operations, I think the big question is, what is included in those costs? Is it just mining and processing, or is waste management included in those costs? And what's come very clearly out of some of the reports that have come out over the last couple of weeks about the Chinese environmental checks is that waste management may not be included in those costs. And given that, you know, you're producing, I think, something like 20 to 30 tons of waste per ton of lithium carbonate when you process lepidolite, that's a lot of waste management. And I think the other thing to be aware of is a lot of the consultants in China who are looking at these segments are not mining people. So they're not aware that, you know, once when you start mining a pegmatite body, you'll have almost a zero stripping ratio. But as you mine deeper and deeper, you're mining more and more waste, and therefore your operating costs go up. So they're not looking at costs through the cycle. They're looking at what costs are for the first year, 18 months of that project. And I think we have to be aware that mining costs and processing costs will increase over time. So I'm pretty happy with my $25 per kilogram long run cost for lepidolites in China. And that then impacts my long-term price forecast for lithium over the medium to longer term. Rodney looks doubtful. He's going to
I think that's great, Matt, because those are my sort of numbers. I suppose the thing we've been struggling with when analyzing all of this is how some brokers and banks are suggesting that lepidolite can grow as production in this sort of price environment, when you've got spodumene producers with much higher grade struggling. So it doesn't really sort of stack up. Not to mention, if you're having environmental issues at this level of production, how are you meant to get to 3.5 to 4 times this volume in the next few years?
I don't have 3.5 to 4 times in my model. I have volumes growing maybe twice from where they are currently. And I think I regard that lepidolite capacity in China, or the bulk of that lepidolite capacity that's non-integrated in China, as a, how would you call it? As a high price solution. So it'll come in when prices go high, and it'll drop out when prices go low, similar to what we've seen in the Chinese iron ore industry.
But you've raised an interesting thing though, Matt. And here's the thing is, is it possibly that there was some gamesmanship in terms of using excess inventory, lepidolite, et cetera, to get to the point to allow a lot of mass exploration into Africa to try and get some projects going there as the bigger, longer term threat to oversupply?
I've heard a lot of conspiracy theories cited in the sector. I'm not a big believer in conspiracy theories.
It's not a conspiracy theory. What I'm saying is it's a strategy. You fill a stopgap and then you know, the idea was, in my mind, they knew Sigma, Liontown, Covalent were all coming on. So you know that material has to come on. The question is, where does the price get set if everyone's moving to market reference when they started? So, you weren't starting an elevated price. We're now starting at a much more sober level.
I don't think that the lepidolite expansion, I mean, obviously some lepidolite expansion was done by large players, but an awful lot of it is mom and pop operations. It's basically taking advantage of the fact that prices were high. I don't think it was, a centralized plan to come on and do that. I think they did it taking advantage of a known occurrence because the prices were high and because demand for lithium from the Chinese property market was weak. So, they basically reset that supply. And obviously the other issue that we hear about time and time again in lepidolite is the so-called integrated suppliers like BYD and CATL, which have their own captive mines. And obviously the thinking there is, well, they don't really care how low the price goes because they're integrated. But at the end of the day, if I'm BYD or CATL and I can buy material in the market for $10 a kilogram and it costs me $20 a kilogram or $25 a kilogram to run my mine, surely I'm going to buy the material in the market for $10 a kilo rather than running my mine. So I'm not fully sold on the idea that, the captive mines continue to run even though, prices crater. But I think, I do see a different level of the marginal cost of production now to what the marginal cost of production may be in the industry in 5 years or 6 years or so, which will be materially higher. And I think that people have to be aware of the fact that there's been some quite serious inflation in operating costs in China and will continue to be if they have to start looking at managing their waste material over time. So, I see a situation now where we got obviously hit the marginal cost of production. But similarly, it's not to say that this will always be the marginal cost of production in lithium. I mean, if you think about it, the marginal cost of production in 2020, we bounced off what, $400 a ton spod con prices. So the marginal cost of production then was much, much lower. And it's risen because new projects have had to come on, which were lower grade or higher cost. And I think it will continue to rise over the next 4 or 5 years. And so will the sort of low price level in the market.
Jumping in here from the editing room to tell you about Lithium Royalty Corp. Lithium Royalty Corp is at the center of a global energy transition and manages a globally diversified portfolio of lithium-focused royalties in electrification and decarbonization. with 32 royalties on 29 higher grade, lower cost projects from exploration to production, LARC covers all the bases with well-managed risk, ESG considerations, and a scalable royalty structure. Lithium Royalty Corp is traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange, ticker symbol LIRC. To find out more, visit lithiumroyaltycorp.com.
Just on the flip side of that, Matt, you know, one of the things, of course, $80 a kilo did is open Pandora's box for supply. Where do you think a sort of quick response, at what price do you think it gets sort of capped on the upside now that you've, you know, introduced new operations and potential suppliers at short notice?
So where do I think the new supply is going to come from?
The new cap. Where do you think, you know, where we'll run into, you know, the market being able to respond quicker in supplying?
Well, I think the lipid-like supply would be able to come on within 3 to 6 months once prices get to sort of $20-$25 a kilo. So I think, you know, that
would they not have a buffer for margin?
Historically, not so much in China. You know, my experience of looking at China in some detail is that you don't necessarily get that margin buffer if it's on a restart. You know, a new startup maybe, but on a restart, probably not. So I think probably, you know, I'm looking at prices to sort of rise by 60-70% off the levels they're at in just before Chinese New Year in February.
Okay, so if we can just go back to the yearbook, congrats, that must have been a labor of love.
Yes.
Can you highlight in there some incontrovertible truths that investors might be overlooking as we go into 2024? Where's the reality check for everyone?
Okay. Well, I think actually there's lots of those situations, but maybe I'll pick out four of them in particular from the yearbook. I think the most important one, when it comes to calling the lithium price, is you've got to pay attention to the Chinese spot market and Chinese futures prices. And, you know, a number of commentators have suggested it's just noise in the market. But over the last 6 months, it clearly hasn't been noise in the market. The Chinese future prices have led the normal lithium prices, the 1 month lithium prices, the fast market prices, the Shanghai metals market prices, etc. And there's a reason for that. If I look at the CME futures market, the open interest is tiny. I mean, fine, it's bigger than it used to be, and it's coming up nicely, and that's great. If I look at the open interest on the GFEX, which is a China future, it's huge. It's about probably 10 to 15% of the market size at the moment. So for me, that's a relevant market. And you've got to start paying attention to that. So I think it's really important. Within the yearbook, I also did a comparison of how much of the market now is exposed to spot prices and how much of the market is exposed to contract prices. And I think, you know, probably 60% of the market now is exposed to spot prices. And you've got to be aware of the impact that that has on spot prices, and therefore it has on contract prices, because as the contract price situation is changing, all of the producers really are going to 1 month contracts rather than quarterly contracts. What the spot price in China is doing is very, very important. And anybody who tells you it isn't, I'm afraid, is living in the past. So you've got to keep an eye on what the GFEX price is doing in China. The second point I would make, which is very important to lithium in particular, is DLE. Direct lithium extraction has been mooted as the new technology in lithium, really for the last 7 or 8 years. It hasn't emerged yet. I'm not saying it won't emerge, but what I am saying is that a number of the early stage producers in 2018, 2019, and now a lot further along on the development curve. And one of the incontrovertible proofs and certainties is that as they have got further along on the development curve, their assessments for how much these projects will cost have risen by 100 to 150%. So let's be realistic. DLE may very well be the answer to lithium supply, but not at the sort of capital intensities that are being quoted by junior companies. And I think it's really important that investors and junior company managements are a little bit more realistic about estimating what the capital and operating costs are of these projects, because let's face it, a number of these projects wouldn't have got away if they had, how does one put it? If they had known that the capital costs would be as high then as they do now. So I think investors have to look at these projects in a little bit more detail and put a bit of a contingency cost on, because I don't think junior management teams are correctly estimating what the capital intensity of these projects are. So I think that's a key takeaway. So those are my takeaways on lithium. I have one really important takeaway on the industry. And that is that I think that the bulk of sell-side analysts and US sell-side analysts in particular are too conservative on EV sales in 2020 from 2025. And I understand looking at the EV market in the US, and looking at the results for Tesla and GM and Ford, which are all, well, GM and Ford, which are hemorrhaging cash, and Tesla, which hasn't been doing as well as it has been doing previously, that you could look at that and come to the conclusion that the EV market is weak, but it's not. And in China in particular, growth is pretty robust. And there's another area that a lot of analysts are not picking up, which is the rest of the world. So the world, ex-Europe, ex-China, and the US. And in 2020, we sold 200,000 EVs in the rest of the world. And in 2023, we sold over 1 million EVs. And by the end of 2024, the rest of the world will be bigger than the US as an EV selling region. And it's growing.
Hallelujah. Someone else is selling this, doing the same story. And the reality is, Matt, is if you look at the production estimates for the US, for the Chinese auto companies, excess outside of China is going to go to rest of world.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the Chinese are very active in the rest of the world. I'm not necessarily talking about Europe. I'm talking about countries like Thailand.
It's
like
everything outside of those three. I mean, I have rest of world bigger than Europe by about 2027.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really, really important. And I think, you know, I read a lot of US sell side stuff, and people have got EV sales globally up 0%, down 5%, up 5%, you know, maybe up 10% for this year. It's not going to be that bad. And I you know, the other...
Sorry, what do you have it at, Matt? Your
I
number.
Have it at 28% year-on-year growth rate. And I was 35% last year, which was actually bang on. I have a bit of a slowdown in Europe and the US, and sort of about the same in China, and acceleration in the rest of the world. But I think the other thing that we have to be aware of, and maybe we'll talk about it later on, which is very important also in terms of forecasting lithium demand, is the plug-in hybrid to BEV ratio. And that has changed substantially over the last year. But I won't mention that now. And then the final point that I would make that I think investors have to be aware of is that a lot of the easy money has been made in this sector. We had an up market basically from September 2020 till the end of 20, you know, that was what, 2 years. I think now cycles in this sector will be much shorter. So I think that a lot of the easy money has been made. We have to be much more aware of what cycles are doing, and cycles are going to be governed by what inventories are doing. So it's really, really important that investors keep an eye on inventory positions at raw material producers, at cathode makers, and in the cell and EV supply chains. And you know, these are these are data points we publish on a monthly basis in Boundary Materials Review, that they allow you to understand where prices are going. And I think increasingly we have to keep an eye on those sort of cycles. So things like the marginal cost of production are going to be absolutely key. And, you know, by knowing what the marginal cost of production is, you called the bottom in the cycle, but also knowing, you know, what inventory cycles are looking like, you can call when prices are about to pick up and therefore equities, and also when prices and equities are about to top out as well.
So that fourth takeaway, cycles are, the easy money's been made, but...
Well, the easy money over the long term. You can't buy and hold over 2 years now. What I'm saying is you have to hold over shorter periods. You have to trade.
The long-term investor in lithium is a mug's game. You need to trade.
I mean, if you're happy to buy and then, you know, not worry about the fact that your position could halve, you know, and then pick up in 5 years' time, then that's fine. But if you're worried that your position could halve in the interim, then yeah, you need to trade around a lot more.
Right. Okay. I mean, I've been doing lithium for 15 years and, you know, I thought this was lithium 3.0. You know, I called it almost famous lithium 2.0, which was the 2016 to 2018 period.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, lithium decade, you know, we would not have this pullback. And I've been reluctant. I debated with Rodney whether or not I should say lithium 3.0 ended and now we're in lithium 4.0. I just wanted to say that this was a, you know, a blip still within lithium 3.0, but, you know, maybe it's not. But look, the scoreboard shows that it was easy money if you bought just, you know, just before the, at the beginning of the month, right?
Yeah.
And or the panic of January, because there was definitely a panic when the spodumene price, you know, decreased, you know, by 28% to catch up to the carbonate price.
Yeah.
Because everyone moved to the monthly pricing, right? Had you, I panic sold some stocks, to be honest, you know, at that point, which I should have done in December, but I have bought back. You know, I bought back some, you know, I sold some Piedmont at 26. I bought back Piedmont at 14, right? I bought Lithium Argentina recently. You know, liquid names, they have cash and they're in production. I know those stories like pretty well. So I think they're mispriced, but you're right. If they suddenly kind of like double, you know, in a short period of time, then you should take some profits off the table, because that, so a question I had here is this a V-shaped recovery? Is this a W, you know, or is it a square root, right? Or is it some other shape?
I mean, it's a really interesting question. And so obviously we've had the run up now in the last week or so because of the environmental inspections in China. But we haven't actually had a fundamental increase in demand. So a number of analysts are out there in the market suggesting that cathode production will reaccelerate. And if that happens, then we should have a restocking event. But it hasn't happened yet. So the big question is this a square root or is it a V? And it could be a V if the cathode production activity comes in quickly enough before the environmental inspection activity peters out. Did that make sense? I'm not very good with my shapes, but so we could get a square root insofar as if the Chinese lithium inspection activity peters out, then we might have a correction and then a recovery when the actual fundamental demand from the cathode makers starts to kick in, probably in the second half of March. But I think the other reason why we've had this big move in stocks is obviously a lot of these stocks were heavily shorted and we've had a bit of a short covering rally here. So the big question is, will the short covering rally peter out and we get a bit of a correction back down again? Or will the demand from the cathode makers move in and support the price and it just is a V-shaped recovery? I don't know.
It's an interesting conundrum. Yeah. A company like Pilbara, though, which has like 20% short, based on the total quantum versus their market cap, I think that's like 20 or 30 days of trading, you know, for that to kind of go to zero. Not that it would go to zero. There'll always be some short.
Yeah.
But we're only like, you know, day five into it. So in terms of if it's just a short covering rally, you probably still have a couple more, you know, weeks to go.
Pilbara in particular is trading about double its average daily volume at the moment. So we are seeing big volumes, which suggests we are seeing, you know, some element of short covering in particularly the Australian stocks. But yeah, I really don't know what we will see, you know, over the next couple of weeks.
Just what do you, whilst you sort of, you know, you've left that kind of open-ended, but what I was going to ask you, Matt, is where across the industry do you see the best value at the moment? Is it in the exploration? Is it in the development? Or is it in the producers?
That's a difficult question. I see a number of the high cost producers as being the best value at the moment. I'm not going to name names because I don't talk about stocks. But I think if you look at some of the really high cost producers out there, you know,
so leveraged,
if you look at operating leverage, if you go from being loss making to being profit making, then the EPS impact is very substantial. So you will see, you know, those sort of producers do very well. Generally in the last lithium cycle, we also saw the developers, particularly the near term developers, do very well off the increase in price. I've been a big supporter of the explorers over the down cycle. My gut feeling is that the highly leveraged producers and the near-term developers will do better than the explorers over the next little bit. Obviously, with the caveat that you flagged Wildcat at the beginning of this call that did 80%. So,
Patriot and Winsome have rallied strongly too.
Yeah. So I don't know, but my gut feeling is if this becomes a sustained recovery, then I think that the highly leveraged or the high cost producers and the near term developers should do very well, because I think they've been oversold, substantially oversold.
But we think you have to look at the cash balances as well, because there's severe dilution risk for companies that that might be good quality, but you know, they have to kind of weather the cycle. I mean, dilution risk is, you know, is evident in something like Piedmont, you know, in Sayona, which is in early construction, but it's also for an exploration company that may have raised, you know, $5 million or $8 million last year. You know, in James Bay, they weren't able to drill so much, but if they get good, if they have a couple of drill holes and good, good results, they're going to seek to raise, like there's going to be a window of capital raises like there was post battery day. I remember I was keeping track, as you were keeping track of all the capital raises, you know, early.
To you guys, isn't it?
I had a question on you. You said the U.S. analysts are underestimating EV demand. We noticed in Albemarle lowering for the first time in 4 years their lithium demand numbers for 2030. They blamed kind of like slower EV, but if you look at their charts, like their ESS number was very small, right? You know, so Rodney's been outlier bullish on ESS. Did you make any comment in the battery materials review? Like, what are your thoughts on that, especially if costs, you know, are going down close to $50 a kilowatt hour?
I mean, I've been tracking ESS very closely as well, and I'm just as excited as Rodney about it. And I think, you know, I mean, just to give you a data point, China put on more solar power in 2023 than the rest of the world put together. And it put on, I think, 10% as many gigawatts of ESS. So there's a lot of latent demand in China for ESS. There's a lot of solar capacity going all around the world, wind as well to a lesser extent. So I think, you know, I've always said that ESS is going to grow faster than EVs, but obviously it's off a lower base, but it will start to become impactful by the second half of this decade. in terms of lithium demand, in terms of cell demand in the big picture. So yeah, I think that's very relevant too.
One other question.
I think the issue, I mean, I don't want to put words into Albemarle's mouth, but I think that the perhaps the issue of the lower lithium demand has something to do with the huge takeoff in plug-in hybrids in China, because we have seen the PHEV to BEV ratio increase quite substantially in China over the last 12 to 14 months or so. And obviously your average plug-in hybrid has 50% smaller battery in China, but actually a 70% smaller battery than the average BEV in Europe and the US. So yes, I think, you know, that's one of the key things that we have to be aware of when we're tracking lithium demand. You know, even though we're selling a large amount of EVs, a greater proportion of the EVs we're selling in China are PHEVs.
Okay, great. My other question that just came to mind, you've been a China watcher for a very long period of time, and mining analyst, you know, and I'm looking at what's happening, you know, in the EV space and the battery space, and China had this Made in China 2025 plan announced 9 years ago. And just looking through the prism of batteries and EVs, it was a great industrial policy. They're winning, you know, they're kicking America's ass, Europe's ass, right? Like, it's crazy. But broadly, you know, the Chinese stock market has been weak for 5 years. You know, there's real estate, you know, problems. There's demographic problems. Like, outside of the narrow prism of lithium, electric vehicles and batteries, the China narrative is not so great. And we're all kind of waiting, oh, well, they'll just stimulate again, and they'll just stimulate. And also, I look at the iron ore price, and the iron ore price has been pretty resilient. So I'm just, you're watching China maybe more broadly, if you can kind of give us a sense of because if China's running, right, you know, then broadly, right, then commodities broadly could run. If commodities broadly are running, you know, lithium might rise with that broader commodity boom.
I mean, to go back to the Chinese economy, I mean, obviously property has been moribund for the last 2 years. And, you know, historically, property has been a major driver of commodities demand in China, particularly copper. Yet copper demand in China was up 10% year on year last year. And why was copper demand in China up 10% year on year? Because of the renewables building. But I think what you're seeing in China, and it's something that a lot of Western commentators can't quite get their head around, is you're still seeing the political move from a fixed asset investment driven economy to a domestic consumption driven economy. And Western commentators are still looking for them to come around and stimulate the property market and stimulate fixed asset investment. And it's just not going to happen in the way it happened in 2007, 2008. So they are stimulating in the soft way around domestic consumption. And they want their economy to move to a situation where it's being driven by domestic consumption, like the Western world economies do. And that's actually really supportive of EVs, because you've got this huge domestic industry and you have the consumers there in China. So there is the potential for Chinese industrial production to reaccelerate this year. Like in the Western world, there are signs that it troughed in the back end of 2023, but it's not going to be like it has been in previous years. It's going to be a gradual recovery. And just on the other macro point of view, in terms of the wider market, I do think that European and US IP will recover this year. And one of the big drivers is that I see is business inventory restocking cycle, which should be positive for demand in manufactured goods. We may very well see the long-awaited infrastructure build-out in the US and in Europe, but I'm not holding my breath. We've been waiting for that for nigh on 20 years, and it still hasn't quite occurred, so we'll wait and see if it does. But I do think the business inventory restocking cycle and the IP cycle will be a bit stronger in the second half of the year, and that could feed into other parts of the battery raw materials complex.
Okay. Anyway, Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks again. Encourage every viewer here to follow Matt on LinkedIn and download this battery materials review. Listen to his Recharge podcast with Cormac Allaire. Lots of great information there. Always love having you on the program, Matt, and exchanging thoughts.
Thanks for the invite. Good to talk to you guys always.